Crowley from Every Day is Saturday, fired up with an awesome, awesome bonus interview with just an unbelievable, inspirational mentor of mine. The guy didn't even know he was a mentor of mine until I told him. That's probably the best kind to be. But, hey, I got an awesome guest with me today, no other than Mr. Mark Gorman. Mark, how are you?
Welcome. Thank you so much, Sam. I'm thrilled to be on with you, buddy.
Hey, man, I got to take you back a few years because you didn't even know you were my mentor, right, long distance.
I did not.
No clue. Never heard of Sam Crowley. You never heard of that guy that has this huge movement with Every Day is Saturday. You had no idea you were the inspiration behind it. So here
did
we go.
Not.
4 years ago, I was broke, as the story goes. My daughter Madeline asked all the time, Daddy, is tomorrow Saturday? Daddy, is tomorrow Saturday? I leave my job. And I'm going after my dream. I got a little sidetracked. You know, my vision, I know you talk, I want to talk about vision on this podcast because you've got tremendous insight into when you have a really crystal clear vision. And so my vision wasn't that clear. It's probably the equivalent of during a torrential downpour looking out your windshield with the wipers that are bad, you know?
Right.
So I buy a franchise. I go broke. I got to go back to my job. I'm sitting in a cubicle every day, and I'm thinking, I'm going to start working out. I'm going to start exercising. I'm going to get my life back in order because I know I'm not down for the count, man. I'm not out. And I know you teach on the concept you'd rather be a live dog than a dead lion. And
correct.
I was a dead lion, man. I was this Fortune 100 executive who had his stock options and the company car in the corner office, all of it. Not taken from me because I opted to get out of that because I wanted to be a dad. So I lose it all. I start working out. I go running around my development every morning, a couple miles, 3-4 miles I was getting up to. I never run before. I start exercising. And I want to talk about your wife, Gina, because I understand she's lost how many pounds, Mark?
Over 80 pounds.
Unbelievable. So I want to get into that as well.
And hey, Sam, she didn't lose the good ones.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that too. But
hey,
anyway,
it's a family show. So anyway... I'm running around the development, and I listened to this guy, Mark Gorman. I was plugged into a motivational website. I listened to a teleseminar Mark was on, and the guy just had this incredible wisdom and knowledge about and inspiration and motivation and business acumen. So I bought his CDs called Win, which you can purchase at Mark's website. Everybody needs to plug into Mark Gorman. Let me give you every way you can by the end of this call. Win. A Message to Garcia, which is still the single greatest, if I had a favorite, that's my favorite Mark Gorman message, is called A Message to Garcia.
And thank you.
So I start listening to Mark, and I'm like, wow, this guy's got it, man. He pulls no punches. He's about as blunt as you can be, and I love that. I love somebody that tells the truth. And so I start getting myself pumped up. I'm like, yeah, man, Mark, you're right. Right on. It's like you and I were having this conversation every morning at 6 a.m., Mark, and it was pumping me up. So here we are 4 years down the road. We launch a membership site called 6 Days of Saturday inside the Everyday Saturday community. We get 1,000 members inside of just a few weeks. We're blowing up on stage all around the world. We have this podcast that people are listening to. They're one of 30,000 subscribers from Australia to New Zealand, the UK, South Africa, all around North America. And you, Mark, I mean, I got to tell you, man, straight up, you were probably one of the top 5 major influences on my life, and you didn't even know me.
Man, I'm honored, and I mean that sincerely. I truly am.
So how does a guy like you get so smart? No, I'm kidding. So anyway, tell us a little bit about yourself, right, and, you know, where you come from, a little bit about Mark Gorman, and then I really want to get into this talk about vision because you had a significant impact on clearing up my vision to go from wanting to be just an entrepreneur to wanting to be a motivational speaker and personal development. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about yourself, Mark.
Well, I'll tell you where I am now, and then I'll tell you where I came from. I'm very fortunate to own several businesses and also to be a partner or a principal in several other companies. Great net worth, very blessed. My wife and I live in a home that, quite honestly, when I was growing up, I didn't think I'd ever even meet someone who lived in a home like this. And we drive gorgeous vehicles and have a blessed life. But I say all of that, and then very quickly, right after that, I say that I will never, ever own the most expensive house I can afford, and I will never drive the most expensive car I can afford because I don't see the point in it. I live in the house that suits me, and I drive the car that suits me, and unfortunately, too many people in the world today, they live for the people out there who they don't even know, and they buy the cars that will impress the guy they've never met, and they live in a house that they have to use folding lawn furniture from Walmart in the living room with bed sheets over the windows because they can't afford to furnish it because they bought a house to impress somebody else instead of, you know, what works for them. And I know you didn't invite me on here to say all of that, but I'm just saying, although I say that I live in a gorgeous house and I have, you know, nice lifestyle, I say that qualifying it by saying, but it's the lifestyle that I choose. I don't invest everything I have in trying to portray some image bigger than life. You know what I'm saying.
No, I know exactly what you mean. You weren't buying things you couldn't afford with money you didn't have to impress people you didn't like.
Exactly. And oh, it's so sad. And lately we've seen the tragedy of, and you know, there's some people who are actually almost feeling a perverted delight in seeing those who did make wrong decisions and did buy houses they couldn't afford, which are now being foreclosed. There's some of these guys out there that have some sort of a sick, twisted enjoyment in seeing that take place, and I'm not happy to see any of that happening. The thing that makes me happy is to know that it's not over, and that truly a live dog is better than a dead lion, and we can talk about that later. But I told you what my life is now. Now I'll tell you, I grew up in a pastor's home. My dad is a minister, and I'm a minister.
You're not going to preach the word now, are you?
Yeah, I'm telling you. Now we're going to – that's why I had to tell you the first part first, man. I told you where I am before I told you where I started.
Hook this in.
So look, I still live in the big house, okay? Don't turn me off yet, okay? But I grew up in a home where my dad was in ministry. My dad still to this day is a preacher. He is in his mid-70s, and he speaks more times a year than I do. He preaches almost every day of the year.
Wow.
He's amazing, absolutely amazing, and he's my hero. I love him. But now, you know, now I started out in ministry when I was a young man, came up under my dad. In fact, my dad, when I was 8 years old, in 1965, our family moved to New Orleans. My dad became the pastor of a church in New Orleans that had about 100 people in the congregation. And during the time that he was the pastor there, from 1965 till 1986, under his leadership, that church grew from 100 people to over 6,000. And so my dad is an achiever, you know, even though some people may say, well, but that was church. Hey, people are people. You get 6,000 people to show up to see anything, you must be doing something right, okay?
That's right.
So even if you're not a Christian, you don't believe in the Bible, whatever else, you still got to understand, I grew up in a home where I was taught by example that if you have a dream and you're not lazy, you can get somewhere and you can do something. But even though I was taught that strictly, and in fact, recently you and I were talking, and I told you one of the statements my dad made to me when I was a young boy that has stuck with me all my life. I'm now 51 years old, and a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, my parents were here in Tennessee. We now live in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville, and our parents were here. My dad was speaking at a church in the area here. They came to spend some time with us afterwards, and we were sitting in our home talking, and I told my dad about that statement that he had told me when I was a kid, and I told him what an impact it had on me, And it was, you could see on his face that he never truly actually realized how much of an impact that statement made on me until that moment. And it was so thrilling for me to be able to tell him that, you know, for, because he, you know, my parents tell me all the time, we're so proud of you. We tell everybody how proud we are of you. We tell everybody about you. And they, everywhere they go, my mom's always giving out CDs of, you know, Getting a Message to Garcia, or my Cajun humor, you know, I do comedy albums, or my speaking, whatever, and my singing. I have a lot of singing albums and all. So, I mean, but anyway, here's the thing that my dad told me when I was a kid. This is the thing that really sort of shaped my paradigm as far as how to achieve things in life. My dad said, you know, son, I grew up on a farm, a poor farm in South Arkansas. His dad was an alcoholic. He drove a truck in the logging industry where he hauled logs from, you know, trees that were cut for a paper company, and barely made enough money to get by on, and then drank half of that in alcohol. And my dad never saw his dad go sober a week in his life until my grandfather was on his deathbed. And so my dad came from such poor, meager beginnings. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, what unfortunately a lot of people would refer to as white trash, okay? He grew up in that type of a background, and to where that even until I was a teenager, we celebrated when my grandmother got indoor plumbing.
Wow.
Okay, I mean, until I was a teenager. My grandmother lived in a house where we had to walk the path to go out and use the restroom. So, I mean, I'm talking about poor, okay?
Yeah.
But my dad said to me, I think I was around 10 years old, maybe 11 years old, and he said to me one time, he sat me down, he said, son, he said, I'm not as smart as a lot of other people. There's a lot of people smarter than me, and they have a better education than me. And he said, there's a lot of people who have more talent than me. But he said, I will always win. And I looked at him, I was like, how do you do that if they're smarter and more tech? He said, because when they're sleeping, I'm still working.
Yeah.
And he said, because I am not lazy and because I do not prioritize rest and relaxation as the top goal in my life, that is why I will never stay down. I may be knocked down, but I will never stay down. I will always win because I don't stop.
Man, that's powerful.
But hearing that amazing philosophy of life, that even if they're smarter, if they have more talent, you know, you can still win because when they're sleeping, you're still working. I was also taught simultaneously in that background that money was evil, that it was wrong to have a lot of money. I'm not saying that my dad, you know, sat me down and programmed me that way, but that was the philosophy you heard in any church. It's the philosophy you hear in most churches today, right?
Yeah, can't worship God and money, Mark.
Exactly. And so I grew up with this contrast there of believing you can achieve great things, but they can't be associated with wealth, okay? You can achieve great things, but don't attach a financial value to them. And yet, as I got older and started, you know, God began opening amazing doors into the business world for me, it wasn't just a stretch for me. This was a stretch for my dad. This was a stretch for my parents. This was a stretch for their peers, their friends, who are in ministry throughout the world, who now saw and learned that you know, the Gormans' second child, their son Mark, doesn't just speak in churches anymore. He speaks in, you know, stadiums and convention centers and arenas and, you know, to crowds of 20, 40,000 people, and speaks on success and how to create wealth and how to make money, and even wrote a book, God's Plan for Prosperity. So it literally has been a real paradigm shift of massive proportions for me to come from that background to now be known excuse me for saying the word sought after, I'm not trying to boast there, but that I literally am one of the people that is most known for teaching people how to create wealth. And not just from a stage, but as a success coach, mentoring people on a private level as well. And so you can see, Sam, I've come from one thing and ended up somewhere else, and I give God credit for all of it.
It's such a contrast to growing up with that in the church. I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, those of us that have stayed close to that, I was raised Roman Catholic, and
uh-huh.
it was a lot of that. You know, the biblical teaching was, look, I mean, if you're broke, the broker you are. Look, this isn't the way everybody, I'm sure, is taught, but I'm just saying you and I share that same common thread, that the poorer you are, the better you can serve, and the better your life's going to be, because
yeah,
you've got all these physical things that aren't distracting you and the money's not there, when in fact, you know, you really can't help. And I know you've shared this, Mark, the story of the Good Samaritan. You know,
yeah.
had he been broke, he probably wouldn't have been the Good Samaritan, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when people, especially when people found out that I'm a minister, because I still, even though I'm a motivational speaker and a business owner, I am still a minister to this day. And if people go to my website, they won't just see all of my motivational speaking and create wealth and all that. They'll also see all my stuff on Bible teachings as well, and I don't apologize for any of that, you know. But when people find out that you're a minister, I've had a lot of them who actually, you know, look at me and they're like, "Don't you ministers have to take a vow of poverty,
yeah,
you know, to become a minister?" And I'm like, I can't find a verse for that, you know. And that's a clue right there, Sam. That's a clue. If you can't find a verse in the Bible for whatever somebody tells you you have to do, that's a clue. Maybe they're not right, you know, because I can't find vow of poverty anywhere in the Bible. So I opted out on that vow of poverty thing. But one of the reasons is exactly what you said, the story of the Good Samaritan. And we've heard this story of this man who was beaten up on the side of the road, bleeding and dying, and how that the pious, religious, leaders walked past him and didn't want to dirty their hands with him. They were too good, too religiously respected to dirty their hands helping him. And I mean, I don't like religion, okay? I love God. I love Jesus, but I don't like religion. I don't like what religion has done to people. Religion has been more divisive than it has been of inclusive and bringing healing. But that's another story. But as we look at the story of the Good Samaritan, after these, you know, egotistical or pious or whatever you want to call these guys that walked past and wouldn't help him, finally a Samaritan comes along. And the story of this Samaritan man, of course, one of the things you have to know is what Jewish people thought of people from Samaria, which is, they looked upon them as though they were less than a Jewish person. They looked down on people from Samaria. I'm sure you know that, Sam. But I mean, a Samaritan, typically a Jewish person would not have anything to do with the Samaritan. So in the story, here is this Jewish guy who gets beat up on the side of the road, and you had all the religious leaders from his group pass him by. And here comes this guy who he typically wouldn't have anything to do with, and this guy stops to help him. But the thing is that if you were broke, you couldn't afford to be a Good Samaritan, because this Good Samaritan, first thing he did was, the Bible says that he bandaged up his wounds and he helped him to get all of his wounds taken care of. And then he took him to what the Bible calls an inn, which was like a hotel, a place where you would pay to stay there. And he prepaid for the lodging for this man to stay there for a week. And he prepaid for all of his meals for a week and said to the man, I'll be back at the end of the week, and if there are any other expenses he's incurred, I'll pay those as well. Well, you know, when you think of most people today, and I refer to Christians, because I'm a Christian. So, you know, if people are of another faith, I relate it to your own group as well, but we could relate it to anybody. Anyone who is taught in your religious upbringing that wealth is evil, but right out of the same mouth that told you wealth is evil, they tell you you should help everybody. And I'm like, how could you? Most Christians today couldn't be a good Samaritan without a credit card.
Right.
Right? And then most of them, their credit cards are charged up to high. They don't even have access to those, right? So, but I mean, literally, how many people do you know, Sam, who could literally find a guy on the side of the road that's been beaten and robbed? In today's vernacular, they carjacked him, right?
Right.
Beaten up, bleeding on the side of the highway. You pick him up, you take him to the hospital, pay his medical expense cash, okay? Then you take him somewhere to a hotel. You walk into the Hilton or the Days Inn or the whatever it is and say, hey, how much is a room for a week? Pay that cash. And how much is breakfast for a week? How much is lunch for a week? How much is dinner for a week? You pay all that cash, and then you look at the guy behind the desk and say, I'll be back at the end of the week, and if he has had any other expenses, I'll pay those too. I don't know a whole lot of Christians who could afford to do that.
Yeah. No, nor do
and
I.
Yet we're told that you're not supposed to have much money, but you're supposed to be a good Samaritan. Look, God is not opposed to us having wealth. And one of the principles that I teach in my book, God's Plan for Prosperity, one of the main principles I teach is that it's not what I have that makes me evil. It's what I love that makes me evil. So having money is not evil. Loving money is evil, right?
That's right.
And my contention is that most of the people on planet Earth who love money don't have any.
Right. And that's something.
Because think of it, Sam. Most of the time when we think of the love of money, typically we think of people who are in their Rolls Royces, wearing their mink stoles or their coats and the diamonds and everything else, and we're like, they love money. But let me tell you something. Even though there are some of those ultra-wealthy people who love money, believe me, I know all of the groups now, okay? I rub shoulders with the ultra-wealthy and the ultra-poor, okay? I coach privately some of the wealthiest people around, okay? And I can tell you for a fact that when it comes to loving money, that there are more broke people who think about money all day than there are rich people who think about money all day.
Yeah.
Because think of it. Sam, if there's one guy who is wealthy and then there's another guy who can't pay his house note, can't pay his car note, and can't buy groceries, which one of those guys is thinking of money all day?
The one that can't buy the groceries, man.
Exactly. So if we help someone to get into a place where they can provide for themselves and for their family, then we didn't do something evil. We actually put him in a better position where he doesn't have to think of money all day. Now he can think of the things that really matter.
That's right, man. And your teachings are really that powerful, and that's where it all resonated with me, Mark, back 4 years ago. I said, you know what? If I focus on money, I'll always be broke. Where I was in my job, even though I had money, it was such an ironic state to be in, where I had the money, but I was really spiritually broke and just focused on I needed more of this, more of this. When I didn't focus on it, but I focused on making a difference, and that was every day is Saturday, and the movement there, everything kind of took shape and form. And, well, I want to go, we'll wrap up the podcast. This is for our subscribers, audience of the Every Day is Saturday show. I want to talk about your wife, Gina, and the incredible story that she has recently, as well as how people can plug into you. And every time I try to nail you down on a topic, we never get to it. I'm going to have you back on about 20 more podcasts so we can get all this stuff.
I owe you, Sam, because one of the things I was going to teach on just now, it would take us an hour to teach on it. But, there's so many principles I wanted to share with you. And hey, as long as you let me come back on, I'll come back on, man.
Look, I mean, you got an open invite, man. You can call me up at an hour's notice and say, Sam, get me on your show, and we'll do it. Because your principles are that good. But I want to talk about your wife briefly, Gina, and her incredible story over the 2009, and also how people can get plugged into you and your message, Mark.
Thank you so much. My wife, Gina, Gina and I, we're teenage sweethearts. We met when she was 13 years old, and their family started attending our church, and we fell in love. We got married. We've been married now for almost 29 years.
Wow.
And Gina is French, from New Orleans. She's half European French and half Cajun French. And in fact, you know, as you know, Sam, I do a lot of comedy as well. And I sing, I write books, I do motivational speaking, I speak in churches, but I also do stand-up comedy. And we have several CDs of, in fact, we have a couple of live DVDs of my Cajun humor. But anyway, Gina is one of those gorgeous, wonderful girls who has a natural tendency to put on weight. You know, it's like, you know, and we've said it all our lives that we've been together. It's not fair. It's not fair that some people can eat anything they want. Other people, you just smell the food and pounds go on you, right? And
right, right.
Gina, after our second child was born, Shara, gorgeous. Oh, Shara is the, she's my heart. She's now 22 years old. But shortly after Shara's birth, Gina began putting on weight and just couldn't seem to win over it. And she went through so many things over the years. You name a diet, she tried it. I mean, she tried all kinds of things. And even went to a weight loss doctor here in Tennessee, where she went for, I think it was like a year, and lost maybe 20 pounds or something. I mean, it was ridiculous. But she then, about a year and a half ago, some friends of ours, a doctor from Arkansas that we were talking to, we learned of a diet system where that literally that your body has three types of fat, and I don't know if you know that. You have what's called structural fat, you have normal fat, and abnormal fat. And of course, we all know what the abnormal fat is. That's the fat that we don't like, that we don't want it there.
Yeah.
And every diet that Gina had ever gone on, Sam, prior to this one, every diet she ever went on, and you've seen this before with people as well, when people start trying to lose weight by, you know, cutting back on their sweets or whatever else, the first fat that they lose is their structural fat, the fat in their face, you know, that gives them nice cheeks. They start looking gaunt, and they get hollow, you know, the hollowed out look, and they don't look right. But they still got that abnormal fat hanging right over the belt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they keep trying to lose weight, and then they lose their normal fat. But the last thing they lose is their abnormal fat, and by then they've lost some of their look. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, man.
But this thing here that this doctor friend of ours told us about, and it's homeopathic. It's very healthy. When they do this and use the drops that you use and all this stuff that you put under your tongue and all these things, when they do this, this is the only diet known of anywhere that the first thing that you lose is abnormal fat, and you do not lose your structural fat or your normal fat. And in fact, if you have been missing some of that, it literally, and you may not believe me, but it literally relocates that fat from where it is abnormal to where it should be within your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then get this, it also enables you to reset the hypothalamus, which is the part of your brain that controls your hunger. And so you know how that each one of us, our brain, our hypothalamus has a sort of a photograph in there of what is, quote, normal for you and me. And so when your brain creates more hunger, it's because its definition of normal for you means you need to be bigger than what you are right now. But with this diet, she literally was able, not only has she lost 80 pounds, and like I told you, she didn't lose any of the good ones, okay? But, I mean, it's like literally everywhere that she's supposed to have fat, she has it, and it looks great. And everywhere she's not supposed to have it, it's gone. And she looks more beautiful now than she did 29 years ago when we married. And at first, you know, she said, I don't want to tell people about the diet because then I'll have to put a before picture on the website.
Right, right, right.
Said, She said, I've been viewed as the chubby girl all my life. I don't want people to see my fat picture. I only want them to see the new thin, slender me, which is now her hypothalamus is reset. That's her new normal, okay? And she said, I don't want to show that. So she held off for a long time. But we had so many people begging us, please tell us how Gina lost all this weight and kept it off. And so now what Gina did, you can only eat 500 calories a day when you're actually doing the 40-day diet part. It has four phases to it. You first phase, then when you do the second phase, which is the actual diet part, it lasts 40 days. And during that 40 days, you only have 500 calories a day.
God, I think I would blow away in a strong breeze.
Not a lot of, but what Gina did is so cool. She took her not because her dad owns the largest catering company in the city of New Orleans.
Oh,
and
wow.
The catering company is based on her mom's recipes. Her mom's the Cajun, okay? So Gina took her knowledge of the Cajun seasonings, and here we are living in Tennessee when she's doing the diet, but she got the Cajun seasonings shipped up here, and she made 500 calories a day taste like Cajun food, okay? So now we developed a website that we've only had open for a couple of weeks now, and people are going crazy over it, and it's CajunDiet.com. And if they just go to CajunDiet.com, CajunDiet.com, they can see Gina's before and after photos. She finally gave in.
Yeah, some.
Before and after photos up there. But also, if you forget all of that, just go to MarkGorman.com. And at MarkGorman.com, you can see the Cajun diet thing. And we have a live internet video teleclass every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. I'm on Central Time. 8 p.m. Central every Tuesday night. I'm on live on the internet with video. You can go to markgorman.com and you click the button. You're right there live on the internet every Tuesday night. Or you can see re-airings of it. It re-airs 24/7 on our website. And of course, we're on YouTube and all those other things as well. But everything is all tied to markgorman.com. And in fact, the people who are listening to this call right now, if they're at all interested in my teachings on prosperity, and what the Bible says about financial abundance and prosperity, you can get a free download of the entire book, God's Plan for Prosperity, the e-book. You can get it free at markgorman.com. There's a button there on that first page that you can click that you can get a free download of the entire book, God's Plan for Prosperity.
That's awesome. I've read the book. It's a phenomenal book. My wife's read it too, Angela.
And of course, also don't forget Getting a Message to Garcia, which is your favorite.
Yep.
That's on there. And of course, when you go to the markgorman.com site, we have a ministry site. We also have a business site, which is actually called Mark of Excellence. And you go to the Mark of Excellence site, you can get the Win series that you talked about. They can get, I have DVDs of Getting a Message to Garcia and Act Like Your Dream, which is now retitled How to Keep Your Dream Alive. There's all kinds of stuff there, plus all my Cajun humor and all of that stuff. So, in fact, we even started a company for my mother-in-law called Granny Boudreaux's because her last name's Boudreaux. So we started Granny Boudreaux's. So now, even some of the seasonings that are used on the CajunDiet.com, we are now having them packaged under the name Granny Boudreaux. So we're getting the whole family in business.
Everybody's in it, man. Everybody's in it. That's awesome. No, circling back to the original when we kicked off the podcast was simply this. There's very few people that have impacted my life the way you have, Mark, and it's unbelievable. I get the opportunity to really. I know we'll be doing more together, from a business perspective, which is just great. But even if we didn't and all I could do was listen to you and your material, that would suffice for me because you got me through some very difficult times. And the reason, one of the reasons is, aside from my family and my faith, is because I plugged into mentors like yourself that helped me understand that I could have my Saturday. It was a reality. It wasn't just a pipe dream. If I just stayed focused, if I took daily consistent action towards it, and I went after it, man. So thank you so much. Everybody, if you're listening right now to this audio, you're one of our 30,000 subscribers to the podcast, you got to go to markgorman.com. You need to buy everything Mark has. Now, I'll tell you right now, you'll be a better person for it, and you will be where I am right now. And even I don't care where you're coming from right now, it doesn't matter. You burn a bridge to your past, you plug into Mark and his message, and it will empower you to make every day Saturday. Mark, thank you so much for spending time on our show today, and I look forward to many, many more awesome discussions with you, man. You're first class.
Thank you so much, man. And look, just as a closing statement, I just want to say to your listeners, and I just felt to say this, there may be people out there who have listened to this call, and they're like, hey, you sound like one of those guys that everything just comes easy for you. And, guys, we don't have a long time on these podcasts to tell all of our crying stories. But what I can tell you is, and Sam knows that I'm telling the truth, that since age 12, I have lived in constant pain 24 hours a day for most of my life. And I don't say that for sympathy. I say it so that you will know, and I give you this as a motto for life, never let your pain make your choices. Don't ever let pain make your choices for you. You make your own choices for your future. Don't let pain make your choices.
Powerful, man. Amen to that. Mark, thank you so much. I appreciate your time, man.
Thank you, Sam. Love you guys. We'll look forward to more of these, all right?
Hey, you got it. Thanks so much, Mark. Have an awesome day, okay?
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Fired up.